Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be discussing in this episode are the top 300 comic sales through Diamond to retailers for June 2018. We say the top 300 because that's what we've got going back historically about 15 years or so now, so we can do some trend analysis on that, but we've got actually the top 500. But when we talk about the breakdown again, we limit it to the 300 just so we can do an apples-to-apples comparison. If we look at that breakdown, it's kind of weird because in terms of total number of units sold, Marvel had 2.8 plus million, DC had 2.3 million plus, a little over. So, I mean, half a million units difference. It works out to just a hair under 44% of the units for Marvel, and then 35.81% of the units for DC. So, definite spread there. But, man, when you flip that to dollars, it's 12.1 million plus for Marvel and 8.5 million for DC. That takes the percentage of the total, the top 300 by dollars, to a 46.88 for Marvel and a 32.89% for DC. That's like a 14-point spread there. And again, it goes towards the higher average cover price over at Marvel. And the other thing that really is notable, not unusual, but notable, Marvel had like 100 items on the list, 86 of which were new. DC had 78 items in the top 300, 73 of which were new. So, I mean, there's a lot of comment even today on our Slack channel about how, you know, maybe these things are crowding out other publishers, other creators, other work. Certainly, I think there's a definite concern there. If we look at the other premier publishers, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, Dynamite, and Boom, we're talking again a noticeable tier lower in sales. 744,803 units for Image. That's 11.53% of the units. Then we get to Dark Horse, 110,952 units. That's 1.72% of the total units for the top 300. IDW had 86,463, which is 1.34% of the total units for the top 300. Diamond had, 81,498 units. And then Boom, not far behind that, with 81,309 units, both doing about 1.26% of the total units.
What struck me is this is Dark Horse's best month percentage-wise in the top 300 in over a year, or a year exactly, actually. And it's not like they have any one thing that really is a breakaway. Dark Horse has just been slowly rebuilding its library, and it seems to be getting to where it's putting out stuff again that people are interested in.
Well, I think having the Xerxes sequel or prequel or whatever to 300 doesn't hurt.
It doesn't, but it's not even their top-selling item.
No, but it's not far behind. It's only about 50 units behind it.
That is true.
But having that, having American Gods, Buffy starting up another season, the Black Hammer stuff's working. So, I mean, I agree with you. They've got a number of things. It's not like they've got one that was just, you know, 80% of their sales or something. But they've got enough things that are kind of hitting at the right time and such that okay. Certainly helps.
It's nice to see. It's, you know, like I said, it's nice to see. It's been a long time for Dark Horse, so that's kind of nice to see.
No, I agree with that. People have wondered if they're going to go under or something. They're at no risk of going under. I mean, they've got enough irons in the fire with movie, TV type stuff as well. But it's good to see them kind of getting their feet back solidly under them on the comics side. Because, again, that's where they get their properties to go turn into movies and TV shows. So the one that I think is going to be interesting to watch moving forward is IDW. Because they've now got DuckTales and some of that stuff from the Disney library. And they've also been picked as the publisher to do the kids' comics for Marvel. And I thought that was an interesting decision. Marvel has just acknowledged they're not really good at capturing that audience.
Yeah, I'm shocked Disney Books didn't want that.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't have a solid footing in the comic market, but mass market or whatever, they'd probably do all right with it. It's just weird because you look at the digests, and who's publishing the Marvel Digests? That's
I thought that was Boom, wasn't it?
I think it was Boom. I've got one around here somewhere. I just don't see it easily. But, I mean, we've now got Marvel content coming out from a couple of different places other than Marvel.
Yeah, but Marvel's still leading the pack. I mean, it doesn't appear to be hurting them.
Oh, it doesn't hurt them at all. But I think it's odd when a company outsources something that's, in theory, in its wheelhouse. You know, you're a comic publisher and you're outsourcing doing comics. Now, this isn't the first time, of course, Marvel has done that. I mean, the biggest case of that would be probably back in the Heroes Reborn thing when they had Extreme Studios and Wildstorm, you know, and they outsourced the production of what, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Captain America, and the Avengers. That lasted a year, but it got attention and it launched into a fairly successful relaunch afterwards of those titles as well.
Yeah, it was an interesting... It was interesting. I mean, yes, it was technically outsourced. It was also the creators that everyone had been missing on those books.
True. How about when they took the people behind, I think it was Event Comics, to do the Marvel Knights stuff? I don't know if they brought them in-house, but it was kind of sort of outsourcing in some sense.
Well, but clearly they brought them in-house. I mean, Joe Quesada has been way up in their hierarchy kind of ever since.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a huge success for him. And creatively, I think Marvel Knights was a really good lineup. So it's interesting when they realize, hey, there are other people that have strengths that we don't, and they leverage that. Sometimes they bring it in-house, sometimes they don't. It's just, if I were in a company that is outsourcing what I think is the company's primary business for part of it, it just feels weird, you know what I mean? Not necessarily wrong, but weird. It's not a bad decision, and I think particularly the various publishers who've dealt with the Disney Duck titles and Mickey Mouse and other stuff, it's worked out. I don't think that stuff really would fit in the Marvel editorial offices. So we'll see where this takes IDW, depending how many titles they do. Maybe it'll make a big difference, maybe it won't, but it's not like IDW is particularly hurting either. It's just in that smaller class of premier publishers.
Yeah, it certainly can't hurt them, and you'd hope it wouldn't or couldn't hurt Marvel, but you never know.
The only concern I've got is how they position these kids' titles, if it seems like they're part of the main universe or not, and if it feels like it is fracturing the continuity or not. But, I mean, Marvel has had kids' books, the various Power Pack titles, and kind of kiddified versions of past events or whatever that they've told in the last decade or so. So it's not like it's a new thing. It's just how they position it could make a difference or not. I don't know.
Well, it depends how kiddified they go. I mean, if you end up with something like the Ultimate line, or particularly like the Ultimate Spider-Man, where it almost becomes more popular than the mainstream one, that's the only place it could be an issue.
Yeah, I'm expecting it, and I've got no basis for this, but I'm expecting it to be more like the superhero adventures and stuff like that. I don't know.
I tend to agree, only because, yeah, unfortunately, all ages is not something any publisher seems to know how to do anymore. It's either we write, you know, truly adult stuff, or we write stuff only for kids 10 and under, and they haven't figured out how to do all ages generically now.
Even when they do, I don't think it sells. I think the Johnny DC line at DC 5-10 years ago, I forget how long ago now. It was good stuff. It didn't stick around.
It was extremely kiddie, though.
Some of it more than others. There were some things that were very much like the canonical Power of Shazam stuff, definitely aimed at a younger audience. But then there was the J. Torres family dynamic and stuff like that I thought was truly all ages.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It may be true.
But I think it comes down to, if you're going to do that kind of brand segmentation, you don't want to have one that's a kiddie entry line versus a truly all ages. And I don't know sometimes if these publishers really see the difference that I at least see in those two groups of approaches.
No, and I've said this from the very start, my concern with this DC or these several DC lines of young adult and kid graphic novels. I'm like, remember, I mean, you know, when we were kids, you want to read Batman, you read Batman. and there wasn't, oh, which age are you? There's this one. No. Same thing with Spider-Man.
Yes and no, because when I was a kid, they still had the DC TV titles like Super Friends, and that was a good entry point. Hey, I've watched the cartoon. I'll check this out. Hey, this is cool. Oh, well, from there, I'll move into Justice League or whatever. So there was a bit of a stepping stone kind of approach there.
Yeah.
But it was really, I don't know that they had any other DC TV titles other than maybe Super Friends. I don't recall. I was much younger back then.
I just don't recall. As a kid, normally you don't want the kid version. You don't want to feel like you're being talked down to.
Mm-hmm.
And as a parent, a lot of the mainstream stuff now, I wouldn't want my kids reading. And I don't know. I just, when we were kids, that wasn't a problem.
I agree entirely. And to me, they crossed a line at least 10 years ago, I'm going to say, where I thought the content was not what I felt was appropriate for all ages. But yeah. My standpoint on that kind of a stuff isn't what do I personally find acceptable or offensive or anything of the sort. It's more of a, if I were to put this in front of the stereotypical grandmother of a young kid, kind of, you know, old school thinker, you know, whatever, could they be offended and have some grounds for it? You know what I mean?
It's not even that. It's how they see themselves. I mean, how many of the mainstream books are branded T plus?
I would think most. I actually haven't tracked that, but
it's a large percentage. So it's not even a matter of, oh, somebody's a prude. Or, I mean, the company sees it that way themselves.
Yes and no, because they do that. But then I see some profanity. I see some other stuff that if they were truly taking a, well, let's be kind of cautious or whatever, I don't think they'd have. I mean, I remember an issue of Supergirl, and this was 5-10 years back. Not only was she cursing and profanity, she was doing it in at least 2 or 3 languages.
Well, again, but again, like I said, I think many, many of the mainstream books are branded T+. So, again, that's not all ages. Books aren't even a goal of those anymore.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to what do you stop including to get it to those lower age brackets? At what point does profanity become a problem or not, or too much violence or whatever? Where do you draw what lines in that age bracket type stuff between what? I mean, there's a certain amount of material that's clearly going to be safe for all ages. Anything they would do in, say, an Uncle Scrooge kind of a comic. It's safe. You could put it in front of anybody and they may say, oh, well, geez, he's greedy or something. But it's not like, wow, that was harsh language or something. Then there's a level at which something gets added, and it's no longer that age bracket, but now it gets to that T+, teen plus or whatever, and then from there it goes up to where you get to, further on, you get to things like the Max line, or even further into, like, the Avatar or some of the other harder core stuff. And if somebody wants to read that other stuff, that's fine, as long as the publisher has marked it such that they don't put retailers in an unfortunate position. Now, an unfortunate position, in my mind, in this is something that has actually happened, where there have been stores near schools, not that they have the school children actually coming into the store necessarily, but there have been cases here in Texas in years past, and maybe hopefully quite a few years past, where stores were getting into trouble because of the kind of material they were selling in their store, because their store happened to be within like a mile or so of a school. And clearly comics are for kids.
Well, again, comics aren't for kids necessarily. And again, I have no problems with the mature stuff existing. It is frustrating, though. You know, I've got small children.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many birthday parties I've gone to that have been Spider-Man, Superman, superhero themes.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot walk into a comic store, which is where you'd think you'd get that stuff, and essentially just buy them the main books of those characters. That's the problem. There's a branding problem where they sell the characters to kids, but if you really want to read the comic books, well, those aren't for you. Yeah, we've got these kiddie versions.
I agree with you entirely. And it comes down to, again, not only how they branded it, but where various people draw the lines, and everybody's going to draw it a little bit differently. So I can easily see where in some people's mind at these publishers, they're thinking, well, obviously with the teen plus, they're thinking it's teen plus, not all ages. But I really think part of why we've seen some readership drop off, interest waning in comics, is our age group grew up on the Super Friends cartoon, the Batman 66 series in infinite reruns, the X-Men cartoon from the 90s and such. there were various things that were easy for us to come by, got us hooked on the characters, and then when we could see comics at a 7-Eleven, at a grocery store, or wherever, that were affordable, like well under a buck. I mean, 40 cents, 35 cents, you know, depending where you got in, 75 cents, whatever. You could get kids on board on comics at that point. Now, not only, I mean, I agree, I would not put most of what I think Marvel, DC, and these publishers put out, I would not say here and give it to one of your kids.
Well, and not even my kids. The kids I, you know, working at church with different Sunday school classes mm-hmm. and stuff. The Marvel films, and particularly Flash, not so much the other DC shows, have a pretty strong following among 10, 11, 12-year-olds, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
While the Flash TV show, you can argue where the line is on an age restriction. I think that in some cases, the comic books are worse.
I would say the TV show is accessible and appropriate for a younger age than the comics, generally speaking.
Exactly.
I don't think the Flash book in particular is one of the ones that's edgier or whatever, but it's a crapshoot as to which comic falls where for Marvel and DC.
Exactly. And again, there is that group of kids that are kind of 8 to 13 right now that are being introduced to these characters and find them popular. And they have the lunch boxes, they have the clothing, they have the films, they have the TV. But if those kids walk into a comic book store with their mom or dad, they ask the guy behind the counter, "Hey, I like the show. What do you got for me?" You go, "Well, he's a little young. Why don't you go to this kiddie section?" That's going to turn them off too.
Absolutely. And as if the price point wasn't enough doing both, it's a double whammy. It's at this point, you know, go get a Netflix account, let the kid watch reruns. It's
which is how a lot of those kids are watching those shows.
Well, yeah, it's cheaper, it's safer, I can't imagine getting into comics the way I did as a kid in today's age. It's not cost effective. The content is questionable enough to cause some friction there, and it's hard to find the comics. So I think,
and again, that's not all comics should be that. Again, I have no problems with the Images and the Alternas, and I have no issue with those things existing.
Agreed.
But there is this group of preteens to young teens that is clearly exposed to the superheroes. And the fact that their reading options are, well, the real ones are too mature for you, and we've got these ones more aimed at 5 and 6-year-olds, is a problem.
Well, I think it also goes beyond just the age issue. I read this stuff for escapist entertainment. I don't need everything I read to be this hard-edged, gritty kind of stuff. It's nice to read something where they're just, I don't know, being heroic because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and again, you brought up the Marvel Knights earlier. We're talking about, you know, Marvel outsourcing. Marvel Knights had a different, harder edge, and that was fine. Those books were those things, and they had those characters. But again, you could still read Spider-Man if you didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow Marvel, you know, again, Joe Quesada became, and now the whole line's Marvel Knights.
Yeah. I think that finding out, I mean, again, the counter-argument is, well, kids aren't reading comics anyway, so who cares? It's all 30 and 40-year-olds or something. And be that as it may, I'm not saying it's not true. It probably totally is true, but it's a question of almost putting the cart before the horse to some degree. You can't get a younger audience if you're not making material that's appropriate for them and accessible to them.
And that's what I was just saying, kind of where this whole conversation started, is they don't know how to do all ages.
Yeah.
There is nothing between mature and the absolute kiddie books. They haven't figured out how to write all ages anymore.
It's funny because I can think of a couple of creators that I think they could give a couple of titles to, not exclusively these characters and they're the only ones who touch them, but I can imagine a fairly accessible, very entertaining, all ages kind of like DC lineup if you were to get people like Tom Zoller for Love and Capes and stuff like that involved, and again, some of the people who did some of the comics based on the Batman animated series and stuff like that. Because I think they have had runs at both publishers where they've isolated cases where they've done some stuff that I thought was truly all ages. It tends to be stuff, again, like the Young Justice stuff based on the cartoon, not the Peter David stuff. Although the Peter David stuff was wonderful too, don't get me wrong.
See, I don't think you have to go that obscure. Jeff Johns has written plenty of superhero stories that I would consider all ages enough. You want to give them to 5-year-olds? Probably not. But once kids are 8 or 10, I think a lot of his stuff is fine. And that, you know, now would do, you know, obviously that kind of went away in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, but like his JSA run.
Exactly. He can do it. I think most of these creators can do it. And they either have reason to believe, or factually, it doesn't sell when they do, or it's just a mindset. I don't know which it is.
It doesn't sell when they do it, I don't think holds water. Again, if you're doing a kiddie book, I agree that that's got definite sales challenges. But if they're doing something that's truly all ages and it's just really entertaining, adults will get definite satisfaction out of it, and kids will be, you know, enjoy the action, the adventure stuff. I mean, the stuff I read as a kid, which was a lot of the mainstream, you know, books, initially at DC and then later in Marvel and such, had an action adventure entertainment quotient that it holds up today. I don't know that today's stuff, if you had put it back in that time period, if it would have survived, both in terms of story content being lacking, and again, you could argue the audience has grown, matured, grayed, or just changed. It just seems to me, if you can get your material out to the widest accessible, widest possible audience, and if not all of them choose to partake of it, that's fine, but you're not kind of intentionally turning away a branch of customers.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's going to be interesting, because if comics aren't careful, I mean, they're already a fairly niche sort of a thing, and I think they're playing into the wrong aspects of the collector and completist mentalities. Because if somebody is all in at Marvel, but then, oh, well, there's this other stuff, there's those digests, yeah, but those don't count. But, oh, wait, now there's these IDW books. If they seem like a separate pocket continuity, maybe that's fine. If they seem like they're part of the mainstream continuity, that could, well, now I'm no longer all in, or it's not all Marvel. Bizarre things can happen with that sort of OCD mindset that I don't think really benefits the publishers. It's, and I think DC is definitely going down this path and got some risk there with the Black Label and all the other age group ones you mentioned, and then also having new material only available at Walmart, I think is, again, a questionable move.
I was going to say, for of all the things they've done, the Walmart one, I think, is the best of all of those moves.
I think it's the right idea, and it's got a lot of potential. I don't think it's actually going to do anything like what they want it to do.
That I tend to agree with.
When I drove to Comic-Con, on the way to and from, there were points we just wanted to stretch our legs and hit a restroom or whatever. So we'd pull into a Walmart or whatever, because that way we could grab something to drink if we wanted to or what have you. And I was curious if they'd gotten the second issues out of the Walmart comic, or the 100-page Giants at Walmart. They hadn't. But it's one of those things, most of the Walmarts either didn't have them, only had a few things left, or had an empty box or whatever. I really don't think it's the outreach program that is going to make any kind of a difference.
That's a longevity thing. I think things will be different if the program continues. I think it will be very different in 6, 8, 10 months, a year, year and a half. That initial rush, all the collectors ran out and grabbed, and they ended up on eBay at ridiculous. Once it's an everyday thing, and they're just kind of in that section, always at Walmart, and the collectors have gone, I don't need those two pages, and they're just kind of generally available to the public, it has a chance to change.
And certainly I want them to have that chance, and hopefully it does good things. But when I've been checking, now that I'm back in town, the two Walmarts most convenient to where I live and where I work, they don't have the comics at all.
Well, like I said, the first wave is both good and bad for DC, and the fact that for the most part, seemingly they sold out, which might convince Walmart to put them in more stores. And then again, once you get kind of past that feeding frenzy of the comic collectors, if it calms down and it's just, hey, a normal product that's kind of regularly there, it actually has a chance to do what it was meant to.
Again, I hope so. More people reading comics, I think, is just good for everybody. But it's one of those things that they're telling serialized story in a format where it's hard to guarantee you'll get every part of the story. And I don't think the stories they're reprinting are such that if you miss a chapter or two, the story works as well.
I agree, which might go back to, hey, maybe start telling stories the way they used to, like that as well.
Yeah. I mean, if they had basically gotten it to where it was three issues reprinted out of a 6-part story or something, and then it just gets the first and the second part or something, that might work. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I hope it lasts for a little while. They've got to iron the kinks out of it, and they know this. It's getting comics, at least a few comics, more accessible to some people because I don't think most people know or care where a comic book store is. And honestly, I don't think in this day and age they need to because of all the different ways to get the same characters. Movies, TV shows, Netflix, video games, what have you. So it's, I came out of San Diego Comic-Con, really, it highlighted for me how much the industry has changed. It's been a slow evolution, but it's crossed a further line. It had been going this way for quite some time. I went to a convention where there were comics being sold, but even the comic publishers were there in a multimedia presence, more as DC Entertainment than DC Comics. You know, even some of the big promotional banners and stuff over at Image were for the TV shows, not for the comics. Now, granted, they had plenty of trades, but comics are clearly an incubator, not the end goal that they used to be ages ago.
Yeah.
Nothing right or wrong about it, but to me, it's definitely gotten to the point where I can no longer go to Comic-Con and just kind of walk the floor and get a sense of what people are thinking of what Marvel and DC are doing in terms of publishing comics. You can definitely see who's got the big, you know, interest in whatever movie or TV shows, but that's something different.
It is.
Shall we jump into the list itself?
Let's do it.
All right, we actually had an item over 200,000 units this time. It was at 200,235 units. So not a whole lot over, but clearly over. And that was Justice League number 1. Now, this is one where I think the odds of the second issue doing remotely this well are, of course, next to zero. But it's a hell of a way to go start the title. I've read at least the issue after it, maybe the one after that. And a lot of cool ideas being thrown out, but I don't know how satisfied everybody's going to be. Actually, I take it back. The second issue is here on the list.
I was going to say, the second issue's on the list at rank 11.
10, actually.
Oh, sorry. I miscounted rows. Okay.
It's 86,001 units. So like I said, nowhere near as well, but it's still, I mean, it's rank 10. It's 86,000 units. It's not bad. It's down 57%.
Exactly. Down, 57%.
But, I mean, anytime you see something really over 100,000, certainly over 200,000, it's going to go down next issue, almost guaranteed. There are exceptions, but not many. The next item on the list, rank number 2, is it sold, 157,731 units, and it's Magic Order number 1. This is going to have a severe plummet on the next issue because I believe about 100,000 of these units were done by, I think it was Reed Pop, I think it was, that did a bulk order so they could hand them out at conventions or something.
Okay, can I ask? I'm not familiar with this book at all.
This is Mark Millar's first work under Netflix.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, we've seen this before with Jupiter's whatever, and that first one sold somewhere in this neighborhood and then disappeared quickly, and then it quit coming out. And, yeah, okay.
Mark Millar is known for doing these kinds of stunts on the theory he gets at least two news rounds. The first one, oh my God, look how it's doing, and the second, oh, well, it's a scam. And for marketing and stuff like that, the guy's smart. He's able to milk the system. But if this is indeed a bulk purchase, and I'm virtually certain it is, because it's also marked as returnable or at reduced rates or whatever, there were things that went on behind the scenes that, if it's a bulk purchase, they shouldn't have included that part in the numbers, but they probably did. If this thing is doing above 30,000 next issue, it would surprise me a little.
That retail rank alone should tell you something.
Yeah, retail rank 12.
And it's a $3.99 book, same as most other things here. One's $4.99, one's $2.99. But again, retail rank's way below all those.
So it sold somewhere around the equivalent if it had been, if the units reflected the dollar value it brought in.
It would sold somewhere around 70,000.
Yeah, 70,000 is what I was thinking, 72,000 maybe. So both heavy discounting and bulk purchase, and probably the bulk purchase is what equivalented out to the discounting or the lower retail rank. But it's one of those things he's able to say, hey, it was the best-selling indie book for the month. It launched great, and indeed he has said that. And then next time we'll see a fairly staggering drop, but nobody's going to care because who looks at second issue sales? I mean, come on. This is a technique, of course, not only that Mark Millar has gotten down to a science, but let's face it, so is Marvel, because the next item on the list is Tony Stark Iron Man number 1, 135,727 units, and that's one where, again, we're going to see a pretty staggering drop on that next issue almost certainly. But the difference is, instead of it being a bulk purchase, they just loaded up with a ton of variants, typically over at Marvel on a first issue, to pump the sales up. And in this case, there is, let me copy this to another file just so I can get it down a little bit. Jeez, there's, I don't know, 20 or more, I think, variants. Give me just a sec to get this to her.
Looking at the number, it's pretty obvious it's going to be something like that. And in some cases, with books slightly lower on the list, we have a second issue. So skip ahead to rank 8, Thor number 1 at 102,530. Thor number 2, also on the list, rank 17 at 63,000, down 38.3%. So yeah, I mean, you kind of see what it does. One of the big ones from last month, Venom number 2 is on the list, ranked 12, 73,198, down 68.3% from that 200 plus thousand it did a month ago. And issue 3 also is on this list at 57,000, down another 21%. So yeah, there's, you know, we see these things. So yeah, certainly not going to be surprising when it happens to Iron Man next month as well.
I think it's going to be pretty staggering on Iron Man, given that there are 27 covers listed in the initial solicits.
Well, and we've discussed this over the years. Iron Man tends to find its water around 35,000 units, and any big spikes on first and second issues, by the time it's an issue 4, it's back to 35,000 copies.
Yeah, they get the big splash, but the level is what the level is. There's only so much interest in most properties. And that's, there's nothing right or wrong about that, but it gets a little weird when they milk the system or game the system to make it seem like it's a much bigger success than it is. And I get that, you know, get the money when you can or whatever. There's a rationale to that. But this thing had a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, a 1 in 100, and it had,
no 1 in 500 or 1,000 or anything that crazy.
No, but it had 23 different covers that were a meet or exceed 200% of Invincible Iron Man number 599, with orders of the first issue regular cover, and you could order all you wanted the variants. For most of them, there was one that you had to opt into, the two that you had to opt into the launch party for, and one of them you could only order two copies of this variant. If you did that. That was the premier variant versus the connecting party variant, not to be confused with the blank variant. They had a ton of different armor variants, which on the one hand is kind of cool, you know, the nose armor, the modular armor, the space armor, the stealth armor, the Thorbuster armor, you know, etc. And if they were to do a comic that had, you know, the I don't know, 27 pages of just the cover art, for $3.99, I'd consider it. Well, again, this is a $4.99 comic, but if they did the covers for $3.99 as just a that kind of a poster book or whatever, I'd certainly consider that. They're not gonna. If they do it, they're gonna do it as a hardcover and probably charge $20 for it. But I think there's an audience for these covers. I can certainly understand the appeal, but if this thing does above 60,000 on the second issue, and to your point, by the fourth or fifth, if it's well above 35, it's gonna be doing well.
And again, some people took some issue with the fact that I kept using the term faux collectible in the last mail report. What I find interesting, and it would be very, very interesting, for these books that have 20 and 30 covers, would, let's say, a $1.99 20-page book with just the 20 covers sell? Or is the interest really in the artwork, or is it just in the weird scarcity collectibleness of it?
I think it's in the collectibleness of it, because if it was in just the, hey, this is cool art, then if you did it either as a comic, or if you did it essentially as a mini poster book or whatever. You remember how they did the master edition of the Marvel Handbook?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, and I absolutely. There are multiple ways they could get the artwork out in these non-weird collectible ways and just make them available, but they don't do it. which means either they're missing a huge business opportunity, which I don't think is the case, or they know it. The image is meaningless.
It's the rarity and scarcity and people, hey, I can get it for this and I can flip it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people who get these covers because they genuinely like the covers, and I've got nothing against that. If somebody wants to buy it, either to flip it or because they love the cover, have at it. My concern and my feelings on this has nothing to do with the consumers who buy these things. If they offer it, feel free to buy it. It's not even with retailers who do the math and figure out a safe way to go offer these and make money on it. That's cool. I think it's bad for the hobby and the industry long term, because they're going to be people who, again, we saw this in the 90s. Ooh, geez, it's a chromium cover. It's a hologram cover. It's going to be worth something. And they're there for the speculation bubble. And sooner or later, that bursts.
Well, yeah, and that's, you say, and I tend to agree with you, fans that want this stuff, more power to them.
Yeah.
The retailers that take part in this bother me to some degree.
It depends how they take part for me.
Here's the thing. Ultimately, running the numbers, as you say it, is basically speculating, even if they're pre-sold to someone. Ultimately, if I'm a publisher and if I'm a retailer, I want to sell comic books. My goal should be to figure out a way to sell the most number of comic books. And that should be true for both the publisher and the resellers. And more, the resellers are being forced into being these weird collectible speculators themselves. Like, well, if I order 300 of these, I can get this one that'll pay for all. At that point, the retailer is just a speculator too, which isn't good for the general flow of the product to the public.
I agree, and that's part of why I've never been in favor of the incentive variance. I think it's encouraging bad practices around, even if they're relatively safe ones. But I think the proof in the pudding here is on the variant covers and stuff where we're going to see an issue next month is on Batman 50, because there were a lot of stores that did store variants on that thinking it was going to be a big deal. And, well, some stuff happened, the story was spoiled, etc. There were some unhappy retailers from what I hear.
But
and that's one
fair,
where they were gambling on it being a big deal issue.
To be fair, in this, and again, yes, I agree with you. There's a part of me that's like, there's this huge buyer beware thing, and it applies to customers in some ways as much to the resellers. But it's the trap you've gotten in by turning retailers into speculators is, and to DC's credit to some degree, I believe they have offered some returnability and things. I don't know about the individual store variants. That was kind of, we'll talk about that later. But I believe on the generic issue, DC did make some concessions to their retailers.
Well, I guess it comes down to each retailer is going to have their own mindset on how they do business, etc. If I were a comic book retailer, obviously I'd want to be making money. That's the whole point of going into any business. But I'd want to be doing it in a sustainable manner. I don't want to be reaching as deep into somebody's wallet the instant they walk into the door. I want to have a regular cash flow from them. So I want to find them books they're interested in that they'll stay on long term. Now, that's also part of why I'm not a comic book retailer. I think the day and age of finding that kind of a long-term buying system for a customer is few and far between, given how quickly titles flip over.
Well, and that gets back into that. Like I said, I mean, in some ways, retailers have just become the number one speculators. And for good or bad, I mean, you can argue they're forced into it by the publishers. But yes, a retailer can't sell a character or a property or even a creator to a regular customer and think, oh, that's a customer for, long term's ridiculous, but for the next year, 2 years. No, because the title and the creators won't be there in 6 months.
If we were to put some metrics around that. A year. Does that seem unreasonable? I get somebody hooked on a book. I want them buying this book 12 months from now.
Yeah.
I'm almost wondering, because I think I could fairly easily do it. For every item on this list, go look for that title a year ago on its list.
Well, go down. I mean, you chart this. What am I talking about? You do all the work. You chart this. And if you go down and look at the issue numbers,
I think it's even more than that, though, because its issue numbers get a little misleading because we've got things that are, legacy stuff.
I agree. So issue numbers 12 and under There's 200 of them. So that makes up, 60, two-thirds of the list. Issue numbers over 100 make up another 6% of the list. And I'm going to say those are mostly Marvel shenanigans, because there aren't that many issues really over 100, and the two DC detective and action shenanigans. So, I mean, you're talking less than a third of a list that just by issue numbers, assuming one a month, is over a year old. And almost all of those are the DC books since Rebirth.
Yeah. It just seems like even if the character sticks around like Tony Stark Iron Man, people had to make a decision. Do I get on this Iron Man book or not? Or do I use the end of the previous one as a jumping off point? So I think that rotation of titles means people at the stores need to continually be selling the customers on, hey, you should just check out this new thing. And this is, again, nothing new. It's been this way for ages now. But I remember getting into comics where literally when I was in high school, I wrote a program that said, okay, Legion of Superheroes comes out on the third week of every month. So let's just project for the next month it coming out on the third week and increment the issue number. Did that for Justice League. I did that for all the titles I was getting, which I was reasonably all in, maybe not all in, but it was a smaller world back then. And I could project roughly how much I was going to be spending on a weekly basis, giving what was monthly, bi-monthly, or what have you, for the next year. And yeah, a year out, yeah, it wouldn't be 100% accurate. Certain titles would have ended or whatever, but it would have been like 80% accurate, I think. Because maybe even 90%, because they frankly didn't change that much back then. Now, I would be shocked if it was 20% accurate. Maybe that's low, because we've got a number of DC titles that have been going for at least a year or two. The longevity of titles is so short. If the title has been around, if this volume of the title has been around for longer than a year, in most cases, I'm surprised.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that it leads back to almost what we were talking about with the Walmart thing. Ultimately, in order to build a readership, not a collector base, but a readership,
mm-hmm.
you need the product widely available on a regular basis. And, you know, much like we're talking about how, oh, the collectors go in, comic book stores have almost gotten to that type of a model. It, you know, like you said, I can't just say, hey, here's the 10 books I get, put on my pull list, I'll show up once a month and pick them up.
Yeah.
Because you got to go through that catalog over there and figure that. And again, I can't tell you how many years I had a pull list at a store, and it was just, you know, it was simple. Here's the 10, 15, 20, whatever books I read. And we didn't have to talk much. I mean, literally, I walked in, hey, you might check this out, you might like this. But that was all there was to it.
I guess I had a different experience because I was reading a ton of stuff. I felt like things were always changing. There was always a rotation of titles, but not to the crazy extent it is now where six issues, it's over type thing.
Well, and again, and maybe it just is I happen to choose a couple. I mean, my first five books on my pull list were G.I. Joe, Amazing Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Batman, and Detective Comics.
Most of which are essentially evergreens, with Web of Spider-Man being the least evergreen of the bunch.
Yeah, but I mean, there's, you know, from the time I was 11 years old or so when that list started mm-hmm. until I was in high school, that was the list that showed up, right? You know, it just was.
Well, yeah. No. But I mean, these days, again, notice how many of these things launched this year or late last year in the titles here. And again, nothing new, but I think it's that churn that makes it hard to have a, well, I always get this. Always isn't that long anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm glad I'm not a retailer. My hat's off to like James and Eric at Cowabunga and other retailers out there that have a fairly good grasp on what their customers want and stuff. But then you've got cases where it's really hard to predict how something's going to do. The two this month were like Man of Steel and the Prelude to the Wedding stuff for Batman.
Yep.
I think both, frankly, I would have expected to sell better than they seem to have. Because Man of Steel was averaging in the mid-60,000s, and those wedding preludes were in the mid-50,000s.
The wedding preludes. Because the actual two Batman issues here, the next two books we would have talked about, 5 and 6, in the 120 and 1 and 112,000.
Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to see things through the roof for number 50. But...
Well, yeah, depending on how those get reported now that DC's made some concessions there.
True. It's... Even with concessions, I think it'll still do well. Not as well as it could have or would have, but if it's below like 150,000, I'd be surprised. But when you've got the main Batman title that's leading up to it doing the 112, 121,000 units, yet these preludes are averaging about half that. People don't want the one-shots.
Granted, I don't do previews. I'm not in the store every week anymore now. It's like every 3 weeks. I didn't even know. But Batman's the character I buy fairly religiously. I didn't even know the preludes existed.
Yeah.
And I didn't buy them. I bought 48 and 49.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them are okay. I don't think you miss much. They were side stories. It's the trick with any kind of one-shots or spin-offs to an event story or actual event. How do you make them interesting enough to make people feel they've got to buy them, but not so essential that people are lost if they didn't read them? It's why we're seeing like the Infinity Countdown miniseries stuff, like Infinity Countdown Darkhawk number 2, it did about 20,000 units. Now, granted, the Infinity Countdown stuff itself, I don't think is really burning up the sales charts. Where is that main one? It is 52,000.
Yeah, ranked 27.
Yeah,
27.
For issue number 4 there, yeah. But arguably that's not the real event, it's just the lead into the event, so they've made this stuff too damn confusing. Just tell an event or don't, tell a story or don't. It's when you try to milk titles like this and whatnot, that's where I think they're getting into risky territory in terms of alienating fans. And that just seems like a generally bad idea in my mind. Let's see, what else do we got? We got
We skipped Amazing. Let's go back to number 4.
That's actually where I was going to go. We got the final issue of Amazing Spider-Man 801 there, 122,256 units. That's down 71.85% from the previous issue. Go figure. Of course, that did just crazy numbers. I guess next month we're going to get the first issues of the new Amazing Spider-Man, because I think already the first 2 issues of that are out. Not that I've read even 801 here. I'm behind on my Marvel. For a final issue, Dan Slott's had a 10-year run, so I'm not surprised it did well. How many variants did this thing have on it? Let me check that real quick.
You wouldn't think it would be that many. You would have think they put all that effort in the 800, the $10 book.
Yeah, this just had one variant, and it was a meter exceed 100% of 798, which actually sold pretty well, too. So
the last 5 or so of these have sold pretty well.
He ended on a strong note. I give him credit for that. He's done, I thought, a great job over the 10 years. Interested to see how Nick Spencer does and how that new title goes.
Yeah. He got relaunched one too many times for me personally.
Yeah, there comes a point where how many times you want to go around the merry-go-round on this stuff when they keep relaunching titles or, you know, retooling the character or what have you.
Well, I stuck with it through the Brand New Day, through all that stuff. The rotating creator, all of that. The Superior Spider-Man's where I finally gave up. And there's people that'll tell me that's a great story. And all of that may be true. But again, you know, 30 years of reading Amazing Spider-Man, and all of a sudden there wasn't one, and like, okay, I'm done.
That's the part I don't think these publishers really appreciate, is when they kind of push us off the fence or whatever, off the habit, we're out. Maybe not permanently. I mean, I'm going to come back to a lot of these things or whatever, but the constant rotation of titles is just... I am a couple of months behind on my comics, but only a couple of months. I've got, with Deadpool, 2 issues of Deadpool, all 4 issues of Deadpool Assassin, the final 6 issues of Despicable Deadpool, and I think there was a 5-issue You Are Deadpool. I mean, they're coming out with some of the stuff fast and just insane pacing.
Which reminds me, we should look at Rank 7, since we just brought it up.
First issue did 105,507 units.
Yep. That's the first Deadpool and the only one on this list.
And, again, I'm not surprised it did well, but it had, this had a couple of different variants. A 1 in 25, another 1 in 25, a 1 in 500, a 1 in 1,000, another 1 in 25, another 1 in 50, 2 meter exceed 200% of orders for Despicable Deadpool 298. So again, the 500, the 1,000, the 50, and the 325s, I think it was, is some of this. So figure it'll do, you know, half that on the next issue or less. And that kind of second issue drop at Marvel, again, with these kinds of promotions, it's to be expected. but I think they're going for can they sell the units versus can they get readers. And I'm not sure that's necessarily the wrong approach. I don't think it's long-term a great approach.
Well, particularly with this type of product. There are products where you want to build relationships with your customers, and there's products where you just want to move as many units as you can.
Absolutely.
Comics, for decades, have been a building relationships with long-term customers, and they aren't anymore.
When do you think that turning point was? Because I agree with you.
It was somewhere in the late 90s. It's when the speculator bubble burst. And I don't necessarily blame the publishers. I don't necessarily blame the retailers. I'm not saying I blame anyone. It's just numbers kept going up and kept going up and kept going up. And you go, okay, and as a publisher, as a retailer, whatever, you went, okay, this is just, it's been building this readership for decades and we're kind of going mainstream and we finally got this huge audience. And then there was that moment where everybody just went, why am I buying 5 copies, reading 1 and bagging 4 of them? And they stopped doing it. And you went, oh, we weren't really building that audience as much as we thought.
Yeah.
And ever since then, they've had to try to figure out how just to move units to survive.
I agree with that. It's just until they can figure out how to build up readership, all they're going to be able to do is move units. And we're seeing more and more of this sort of a thing. With just throw another property out, try another take on the character, and see what sticks. And sometimes that's not a bad thing, because every once in a while you'll get just a complete home run out of that. At least creatively, if not sales-wise. But, again, most of these things are selling, you know, not particularly great number of units. You know, by the time we're at rank 30, we're at about 50,000 units. Everything north of rank 30 is below 50,000 units. Not uncommon. Matter of fact, it's very common. Get to rank 60 and you're below 30,000 units. So there's definitely a need to just move the units however you can to stay afloat. But when you've got a comic where, again, with that Tony Stark Iron Man, there are more covers than I believe there were interior pages, something's not right with that. You kind of got the tail wagging the dog at that point.
And again, the argument there could be, well, the art sells. But again, if the art was what was selling, you think you'd be able to put out poster books, pinup books, you know, prestige bound of just all the covers. But they don't do that because that's not what's selling.
There was a point where there were pinup books coming out on a regular, not every month basis, but a recurring basis.
Absolutely.
We're not there.
Yeah, no. That's, again, the 25 covers aren't selling on the fact that there's 25 amazing pieces of art that different people want.
Mm-hmm.
There's 25 covers, doesn't matter what's on, that have these weird manufactured scarcity.
Yeah, but again, that's the way the game's getting played these days.
Another thing I will say, for good or for bad, and I would argue it's for good, DC and Marvel both have a lot of multiple issues of the same title on this list. What is amazing to me, looking at the DC ones, mm-hmm. is how many of them are back-to-back. Batman 48 and 49, ranks 5 and 6. Man of Steel, 2, 3, 4, rank 14 through 16. Flash, 48 and 49, and rank 24 and 25. Detective Comics, 382, 383, ranks Wonder Woman, 44 and 40, or 48 and 49, at ranks 44 and 45. It's amazing how many of those there are. Which, you know, Harley Quinn, again, same thing, 43 and 44 at rank 61 and 62. The only Marvel one I can find like that, and there's two of them, and they're all clustered right together, and that's Old Man Logan, 41 and 42 at ranks 57 and 58. And surprisingly, right below it, X-Men Blue, 29 and 30 at 59 and 60. The rest of the Marvel books particularly, where there's two or three issues on here, are all over the place. They're not even close to each other in some cases.
Yeah. I think the DC has, well, I've always thought DC had more stable sales than Marvel. And part of it with the Marvel is they'll toss variant covers on different books at different times, heavy on the first issue, but not just exclusively there. But I think they've almost trained their readers to be a bit more fickle. And most Marvel books have a variant, even if it's an open to order or something on it. Whereas DC kind of pulls back, or at least historically has pulled back on that a bit more. And
that's changing.
Yes, it is.
But And again, this is why I say I don't necessarily blame the readers. I don't necessarily blame the retailers. I don't even necessarily blame the publishers. There is that point where you go, as a publisher, you can't just leave money on the table. And if these things are making money for the resellers, you can't just, you know, you'd almost encourage the publishers. Again, I understand the cycle. I don't not understand the cycle. I just,
but
long term, it can't be good.
That's the thing, is when is it the difference between you're leaving money on the table today versus you're depleting the money at the table long term? Because you want to have enough that you're getting out of your customers on a regular basis for the store and the publishers to stay afloat. That's good for everybody. But if you're reaching too deep into the wallet, you scare the customer off, you get them out of the hobby, you lose them for good. And I get the money while the getting's good. You gotta get the customer while they're there, whatever. But if this were, they're doing an original trade paperback once every 9 months or something like that, that's different. At that point, okay, get them when you got them. But the thing here is we're expecting these customers to come back every other week, essentially, every third week at worst. You want to have a regular kind of cash flow with them. You want to have the material they're looking for when they come in. You want them to have the money to get the material. You want them to be happy with the material they've got. And generally speaking, I don't think they're certainly DC is treating this more like a long-term business than Marvel seems to be. And I think some of the other publishers have different challenges of, even if they're treating it as a long-term business, they can go half a year without releasing an issue. And that's problematic in another way.
And I don't have the Slack channel open as we sit here, but I just within the last, we're recording this on August 2nd. Mm-hmm. Within the last few days, several Image books got canceled, or I know Astro City announced a while ago they were going to a trade model. I believe Greg Rucka, one of his books,
Lazarus.
And then didn't like two or three Image titles kind of make that announcement yesterday?
Saga's going on a 1 year hiatus, and yes. Then I think it was East of West maybe going on a hiatus, and then
but there was one that was going to coming back as trade, like Motor or something, or
Motor City, Motor Girl, one of the two, I forget.
Again, something I'm not familiar with. But I think there was one or two that kind of said, yeah, they're going on hiatus and they're eventually come back as trades.
This isn't the first time there's been a push to go from single issues to trade. And last time around, there were a couple that I think are still going, like Girl Genius, maybe, with Phil Foglio. But I think that's a bit of a unique case. Other publishers that went away from single issues to the trade stuff, I don't know how many of them are still around, because this would have been 10, 20 years ago. What prompted it at that point was Diamond was basically saying, if your book doesn't move like $2,500 worth of stuff, it's not worth our time to carry it. So some of the publishers that were selling consistent but low numbers, like Claypool, their stuff would be, I'm going to say, somewhere around the 700 unit range on a regular basis. But they were okay with that. It worked for them somehow. That was below that threshold. They either, I forget if they went digital or they went trade or whatever, but they essentially, they stopped being in comic stores. Now, I'm not going to say that's going to happen with Astro City, with Lazarus or the other stuff. But there have been other times where publishers and creators have said, you know what, I think Finder might have been one of them with Carla Speed McNeil. Stop doing issues, go to the straight to the collections. It can work, but I think you've now changed the cadence of the purchasing stuff. It's hard to keep people in that habitual buying pattern. And I think, for my money, that's the secret to success. Get somebody hooked on your stuff, get them to come back on a regular basis and give you money.
What's really interesting is, in some ways, you could argue comics are following kind of the book series model, which for a few years, now that era's kind of passed, was extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, the Harry Potter books obviously are the key example. I mean, it was one book that did phenomenally well every, you know, year and a half. Mm-hmm. And people came back and were excited to come back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's interesting is I'm a mystery guy, and there's a lot of, you know, detective and mystery books that have series. I mean, going back to Sherlock Holmes all the way up to today, there's hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Those books are almost going the other way, where a lot of the writers and authors of those books are releasing novellas in between installments of the books, if not books becoming two or three novellas, because they're putting them out as like digital only, you know, $3-4 Kindle books. And then once they have three or four of those, they'll publish a book, as opposed to the old way of just doing a book every couple of years. And it's weird. It's like, while book publishers who are used to that, you know, if you have a series coming back every so often, are trying to shorten that window. Comics seem to want to be, which had the serialized story going for decades, seem to want to be going the other way now.
That is interesting. I've mentioned before how when I was in college, I'd go hit the bookstores on a weekly basis, go pick up some sci-fi novels or whatever. And there were a couple, it's like, oh, there's another one in this. It'll be another 6-9 months before the next or whatever. That's fine. I'll read this. And then 6-9 months later, I'll get the next. There were other, like the Star Trek books coming out through Pocket Books or whatever at the time. They'd, you know, every week, every other week, or at least once a month, there'd be a book coming out for one of the branches of the franchise. And granted, back then it was the original series in Next Gen, and that was it. But after years, they added more. I would usually leave the store with a book or three every week, many of which may still be sitting on my shelf unread. Many of them are read, though. But it got to the point where I stopped finding books. Oh, well, I'll just come back next week. But after enough misses, it's like, why am I doing this? And then suddenly my purchases plummet. Now, granted, there were, you know, getting out of college and other changes in life that increased and decreased my reading accordingly. But I think the reason these book publishers are doing, or creators are doing, the novellas and the other things in between is to sustain interest between the larger installments. And I worry that it's been hard for, like, the Earth One novels, or not novels, the graphic novels, to really gain a significant amount of traction because they're coming out so infrequently. If it was every quarter we're going to get one of those Earth One books or whatever, then there's a cadence to it.
And there is no cadence. And it seems to be a very wonky cadence if there is one. Because when they come out, you tend to get two or three in like a quarter, and then you won't get any for another year. And then you'll get two or three in a quarter, and then none for like a year. Those Earth Ones, as a matter of fact, if you go back in the archives, John and I reviewed, did like a back issue spotlight type thing on, I don't know, the first 5 to 8 of them.
First handful of them. I forget how many.
Yeah.
I have committed to doing another one of those episodes with you. I just need to catch up on my other reading to find the time to read those. But
to be fair, I'm not even current on them anymore because again, it went like a year or two without one. And then we got two or three fairly quickly. The Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and the second Batman one kind of all came out within, you know, 4 or 5 months of each other.
Well, and I think another Titans and the third Superman as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the Netflix shows for Marvel. You know, they dump a whole episode at once, which is akin to a book or a graphic novel or whatever. But they go a ways between. I mean, there can be story threads picked up from a series that they last released 2 years ago at this point. It's insane. It's hard to build the mind share, if you will, with your audience if you're coming out that infrequently.
Yeah. By the way, I did look it up. And it looks like it might have even been just from earlier today. And thanks to Dr. Moe for posting these. Youngblood apparently has been canceled and will be done in an Image event called Blood Wars eventually. Motor Crush is the one that was canceled and listed as coming back in trades. And East of West is just kind of up in the air.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know if the trade original format really works. It's
Again, it works for books. There's got to be a way to make it work. But again, it needs much more marketing. And again, like you said, it needs some kind of regular cadence.
Does it work for books is my question also, because...
Well, that's true. As we said, the books are kind of getting away from it even.
Yeah, I have the same sort of problem when I watch a TV show that goes like a year plus between seasons. I get to the start of a season, I'm like, where did they leave off? And if I don't remember where they left off, how excited could I be about the story? And I think that's a large part of the secret to success is Walking Dead does well because people want to know what happens next. And I think there are challenges to be had here. And clearly the every other weekish frequency for DC is helping story momentum and sales momentum. But it also comes down to there's a lot of stuff coming out. It's hard for people to keep up. I'm having a heck of a time myself, but I probably get too much. And it's funny because now that I'm not technically all in at DC because of the Marvel or the Walmart stuff, I mean, and I'm way behind on my reading, I feel like I now have, I don't want to say the excuse or the permission, but a way to get around the OCD if I need to and just start cutting back.
Well, and you often have said if DC went to a Marvel Unlimited type subscription, you would consider it. And I know listening to your Comic-Con episode from this morning, you have already kind of pre-signed up for the DC service, which apparently is going to have some selection of comic books.
Yes.
So if that grows, you might finally get your, hey, they're both there.
If it gets to where, even if it's 6 months behind, but between that, the DC Universe stuff and the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited, that, yeah, I can get everything for, what, under $20 a month?
Yep.
That's really hard to turn down because, well, geez, now it'd be digital. Now I just need a convenient tablet type thing, be it the Surface I've got or some other device. I can read the stuff anywhere. You know, no more of having, what, 4 short boxes worth of comics to read sitting around and then having to go dig through to go find the one I want to read next. It's a game changer. And at this point, I really think that subscription model mindset may be the salvation for comics in terms of readership. I don't know that it's the salvation. It may be the death knell in terms of content creation, but...
Well, but we've had this discussion. As Netflix and other businesses has proved, if you can get enough people to sign up and be happy enough with it that they don't take the time out of their day to cancel, it's you can certainly sustain it.
Yeah. No, I think they could get to that threshold number of subscribers and make it worthwhile. And I think DC is clever to be using the movies, the television shows, the cartoons as a value-added bonus or whatever, or the main sales driver to get them there if they want to go there.
To be fair, Marvel could end up there.
Yes, absolutely. But it'll take them at least another few years to get to the point where they could move everything over there. And certainly they've got the content library to do it.
Here's the thing. Disney has been threatening for several years now to create their own streaming service. And at this point, it looks like both Star Wars and Marvel films would be a key part of that streaming service, as well as the traditional Disney film library. Rolling that into the Marvel Comics Unlimited doesn't seem unreasonable or necessarily something that would take a lot of time.
No, I think it'd be a smart move. If you could basically sign up for either at one price or both for a lesser than the cost of both type deal or what have you, again, it's hard to turn down. So the problem is, if they do that, at what point do they almost kill off the direct market? Because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of these comic sales, we've got a lot of things in the, we'll say, 60 to 100 range that are in the 20 to 30,000 units range in terms of the rankings there, 60 to 100.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But again, the only real impact, seemingly, the direct market can have is on something that's a perceived collectible. So I'm not sure how many readers that either generates or B, you stand to lose. You stand to lose a group of collectors.
I think we got to split hairs a little bit on this. I think certainly the collectors are served by the physical property of the collectability. Absolutely. People who just want it for the story may or may not want to translate to digital, but they certainly have that option. The problem is, if for $5-$10 a month, I get everything versus getting just those items from ranks 60 to 100, which are, again, the middling sales level for a Marvel DC book, suddenly that takes a lot of money, even at the, okay, they only get half of it to the publisher, et cetera, et cetera. They don't, I'm not even going to take out the printing because there's the cost of the electronic overhead, et cetera. Even if you use a cloud-based service, you're still paying for some of the stuff. They get less money coming in to pay for the content creation. Now, they may be able to do it to a larger audience.
Again, it depends what the size of that subscriber base is. That's the key.
No, absolutely. And I think it's not unreasonable to say it could easily be a minimum 20 to 30,000 people based simply on how average titles are selling. And I'm not saying it's these 10 to 20,000 people. I'm just saying that seems like a reasonable number, a minimum.
Well, yeah, but I could be a lot. Again, if you tie it into the Marvel or the Disney streaming library.
Oh, yeah. If you tie it into the movies and TV stuff, now you've added orders of magnitude to it.
And you add the Star Wars to it because, you know, Marvel, again, you've got and Digital Unlimited, at least when I was slowly adding all the old Star Wars comics to it. Again, the Marvel films, you'd have all those. This is where that decision to outsource Disney Comics is interesting, because the one thing you might not have are the Mickey Mouse type comics for that audience.
Almost guaranteed you would be able to have that. My understanding of how that works, and I could be wrong on this, but my understanding is if you're one of these people who've licensed Uncle Scrooge or whatever, and you go create a new Uncle Scrooge story, any one of their other licensees can then publish it. So that's why a lot of what we're seeing in the Uncle Scrooge stuff is stuff coming out of like Italy or wherever.
It's all the Italian stuff.
Yeah.
Has been for 20 years.
They're the ones doing the content creation. The other publishers are just saying, oh, let me translate it and move it. So that's certainly doable. But my question would be, if they had that kind of a service that's got the movies, the TV shows, and also the comics, how much of that revenue coming in is actually going to go towards creating new comic stuff versus creating new TV or movie content?
Well, that's arguably, it doesn't have to be that much.
That's a fair point. You could do the equivalent of one blockbuster movie's budget and fund content creation for, you know, a Marvel DC publisher probably for the year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even if that's, you know, comics only get 1% or half of, you know,
it goes, you know, further. Yes, that's fair.
It could be total replacement for that budget.
Yeah. Yeah. I've often thought it would be an interesting approach for a movie studio to allocate the $100 million they would do for a blockbuster movie to doing comics. And I think you could fabricate a comic publisher out of that pretty easily, particularly if you could leverage the library of intellectual property that said movie studio would have. I mean, comics are small potatoes compared to other forms of entertainment. And it would not take much for somebody to come in, spend what for another venue is a middling amount of money, and for comics is just crazy money, to either go set up a nationwide chain of comic stores like Hastings was on the path to do before they went out of business, like GameStop may attempt to do.
Before they go out of business, potentially.
Potentially. Or again, step in and do something in the publishing or other avenues. It's something that, again, other movie studios or whatever have much deeper pockets, even video games for that matter.
And I'm not sure how much. Here's what's really interesting is I'm not sure how much, with the exception of the actual movie theater, there is a market left hugely in physical media. Books, ebooks outsell physical books by huge magnitudes now.
Well,
The
convenience of them is insane.
Fiction outsells textbooks, obviously, still, which is still the bulk of book publishing is still physical. But even that's changing.
That's good. I think having digital textbooks is a smart move.
But, you know, and I was one of the last hold-ons to physical over the years. I've got a ginormous DVD and Blu-ray collection because of that. Within the last 6-8 months, I'm finding, you know, my last thing was I'll always buy the Blu-ray with the digital code, and then I'll only never take the digital code out and set it on the shelf and never use the physical item. The last few movies I've bought, I gave up and I just bought them digitally.
I'm still getting the Blu-rays.
Yeah, and like I said, I was too until a few months ago, but, you know, you never know.
I think, I don't know how long my habit of getting the Blu-rays or whatever will last, but certainly if they get to a different physical medium, which at this point is questionable if they would ever do that. But it may be that once they get to, you know, 8K or whatever is beyond 4K, that may just become a download-only sort of a thing, and they may not keep doing the physical.
Yeah. So, I maybe that is the future for comics. I just don't know.
Certainly getting it to where there's an instant accessibility and killing off the collectible aspect for a storytelling medium. Not to say the collectibles go away, but I'd rather the collectibles be true collectibles, be it an action figure or something like that, than just a blank cover variant or different art on the cover or something. But they need to do something to capture a larger audience, because there are way more people interested in stories about these characters than comics are serving. I mean, it is...
Yes, that's obviously true.
Yeah. I sit through the credits of the movies at the end, and there are, I think, more people listed in the credits than are buying some of these comics. And that's staggering, but again, it takes a huge amount of effort and people to put together a motion picture versus the handful of people it takes to put together a comic. So we've had a couple of other things that have launched, in some cases to big numbers, in some cases to not so big numbers. Like Charlie's Angels, number one, it did 9,425 units. Obviously, second issues and after that, it'll go less. But it comes down to it's a low enough investment that, I mean, they could make money off that. But there, one of the things I did do, and this is following up on the conversation we had last month,
sure,
on how do they make money at some of these lower sales units. I talked to a couple of people, not going to name names or whatever. The general consensus was they're not. This is not make money to live and eat on. This is side money. This is build a library of content. This is get your work out there, get some experience, that kind of stuff. Not...
We figured it out. There was no way these people in profit were making more than $1,000 or $2,000 a month maximum. And those were generous.
Yes. Estimates. Yes. Those were generous estimates. And that's fine if the people going in have their eyes open and they know what to expect on that. And I'm sure most of them do.
I was going to say, I do want to, the one thing that stuck out to me are the second and third highest rated image books on this list.
Okay.
At ranks 37 and 38, which at rank 37 was Spawn number 286 at 38,059 units, and Saga number 53 at 37,050 units. It is amazing to me, for all the press, publicity, buzz, word of mouth Saga gets, here we are, 286 issues, being outsold by just the next issue of Spawn. And Spawn, which, and Mr. McFarlane take a lot of, you know, it's laughed at as all the problems. And as someone who owns all 286 of those, it is nice to see you can just put out an issue a month. And in Spawn's case, for many periods, an issue every 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 months.
Yeah, put out an issue. It doesn't necessarily need to be every month.
And hang in there and keep doing it.
But in fairness, it's only been the last few issues of Spawn that have outsold Saga.
Yes, that is true. But again, we're talking, and it got a big jump when it got to 250, and it got another big jump at 275, but it's maintained that since then. And are these the best stories ever? No. Are they solid? Yes. Are they fairly regular now? Yes, which is very nice. The art's always been good on these books since day one. Not that that's surprising.
Yeah, but really it was with 284 Spawn that it went from selling in the 15,000 to 20,000 range to the 38,000 to 47,000 range.
Yep.
And frankly, for most of the past decade, it was selling under 20,000 units for the most part.
Oh yeah. And McFarlane doing covers again is helping.
Oh yeah. I mean, I give him credit for continuing to just put it out the whole time and keeping it going. But it's an anomaly that it is outselling Saga at the moment. And it's...
Well, it will continue to outsell Saga for another year at least.
Well, I was going to say, if Saga were to continue going, it'd be another matter. But it's going to outlast Saga. And that's part of it, is the key to winning is continuing to publish. It's funny how that part works.
And I'm sure Saga is outselling Spawn trades by miles and miles and miles, because the few of us left still reading Spawn probably still buy the issues. Matter of fact, large chunks of Spawn aren't even collected. You can get the first 100, 150 fairly easily in collections. After that, they get very spotty.
So yeah, with Spawn, it had been starting at 40,000 back in 2003, was sliding pretty steadily down until 2008, had a bit of a spike, back down with a major spike in late 2010, early 2011. Really, it was starting in 2012 where it started to pick up a little bit of momentum or whatever, but then going back down. But then in 2015, we'll say second quarter, suddenly it's doing better than it had been. And then again, a couple of months ago, it really started just shooting through the roof again with the new covers and such. Whereas the trend for Saga, it started a little above 50,000-ish, plummeted for the first two issues, as is common. But with that fourth issue, it started picking up. And then mid-2013, it hit a bit of a peak there. a little less for their 2014 and 2015, and then another kind of a peak there, I'm going to say around August-ish of 2015, give or take a month. And then it started a fairly steady slide down with one major spike in between. So it's cooling off, whereas spawn is, I'm not going to say burning up, but it's certainly heating up.
And again, spawn's not selling millions of... This is not a key to success for spawn, but it is in the top 40 and above one of the books that gets talked about like it's the thing that's going to save comics, which, again, I think just goes to that point that I'm not sure what the comics industry is really trying to do. Because what
I think people have lost sight of the fact that Saga is now selling about 20,000 units less than it had been selling about 2-3 years ago.
Well, yeah, but again, you're talking, and it's taking a year off now, which probably won't help.
Probably not, but again, we'll see what shape it comes back in when it comes back, because I don't think the year or two off for Black Magic hurt it at all. So it's, if you've got a loyal enough audience and they're interested enough in the material, the delays aren't always a big deal, but it comes down to, have you built up the readership or have you just built up sales? Because I think if you just built up sales, you're going to be in a world of hurt sometimes.
The other kind of overarching thing I wanted to ask you about, just because I noticed that I'm not used to it. There's a lot of, particularly in DC, well, in general, kind of in the top 70, a lot of positive deltas, something we're not used to seeing. Certainly not by any stretch, all of them, but a lot more than we're used to seeing.
Well, one of the things I did this time around when I was doing the crunching of the numbers is I chatted with Eric over at Cowabunga. And you'll note there are a couple of the items in the delta. There's a little red triangle in the upper part of the cell. If you put your cursor over it, you'll note it'll often say like open hot open to order Matina variant, or multiple variants including a J. Scott Campbell polybagged variant, or Joss Middleton variant or some other. There have been a couple of these that have had not just variants, but variants by particular artists that the variants tend to do better for.
Oh, absolutely.
And some of those are accounting for like the 37.42% upswing on Batgirl, or the 7% upswing on Deathstroke, or things of that sort.
But I just, you know, again, I quickly just filtering to DC and positive deltas. I mean, in the top 300, there's 23 of them, which is about 21 more than we're used to in a month.
Overall, we wound up with only with 15% of the items on the top 300 that sold better than the previous issue. So I think DC may have had a little bit better month than average, but it kind of worked out in the wash.
It did.
Almost.
Okay, so yeah, I didn't go down and kind of look at the whole list and see what that shows.
I figure you're going to have upswings on Batman and Detective and stuff because of the Batrimony stuff. Batman was guest starring in Deathstroke, so that's going to account for a little of it there. There's those kinds of issues to be had. I'd like to see way less red. I like seeing more up than down, but if it's for the wrong reason, that's just setting up a massive down for the next month. The big thing to take out, though, is, you know, for the top 300, the number of issue over issue within a title gains, that's a few lines below the percentage for the top 300.
Total losers over a million, 1.1 million, total gains about 100,000. So net loss of over a million units.
Even if you have a number of titles that are doing up, the ups they do are usually a drop in the bucket compared to some of the downs. But again, that's a factor of the skewed numbers based on the incentives and how that inflates the stuff. Because that can't factor in usually on a first issue as to an increase in sales. If somebody can find a way that a better metric for this, I'd be all ears, because the truth of the matter is titles start at a given level. They don't get credit for having gone up to that level. They just start there. They attrit until they go out. When that title goes out, we don't lose those units, but it'll often get replaced by a replacement title selling, you know, twice as well, three times as well, or whatever, depending how hot and how many incentive covers they put on it. So trying to find a good barometer for this sort of a thing is hard, and that's part of why with the articles I've gone to the, you know, increased in sales for titles and decreased in sales and whatnot. And even there, this month, we had about a 2 million plus, 2.1 million upswing and a 2.6 plus downswing, just showing the volatility in the sales from month to month. It's one of those things, if forces aligned either all up or all down, we could have just a radically different market within 2 or 3 months. And hopefully that doesn't happen, because odds are it won't be in the up direction. But it's funny, because there's a lot of consistency in the market and there's a lot of volatility in the market, and that's just kind of bizarre. One of the consistent things is, man, that $399 price point is just about 75% of the items in the top 300, only about 71% or so in the top 500, but it is the dominant price point with, in the top 500, $499 being the next most likely, but in the top 300, it's really a toss-up between it and $499 and $299. And there's a strong presence of the dollar ones, particularly those true believers. I think Marvel's got a good practice they're doing with that in terms of getting some of the reprint material out there. I do think DC should consider doing reprints within the direct market. Man, if they were to do some low-cost ones, doing some old either JSA or Legion or something like that, I'd be all in for that.
Yeah, no, it'd be a great idea. But yeah, 87% of the top 300 are $399 or greater. 10 2/3 are the $299, and then, you know, a little over 2% of the dollar books.
Yeah. And I think the dollar books are really tying into either what's the next movie Marvel's coming out with or stuff like that. And they're timing, they're theming that group, the monthly group of true believers, decently. Nothing I felt the need to go get myself, but I can definitely see why people are picking them up.
You see, what are they?
Well, if we filter the list to the dollar price
they're
point.
They're all true believers, and they're all Ant-Man, with the Ant-Man movie having come out in July, and these are the June numbers.
Yeah. They either correspond to the latest movie coming out, or like they did a Wolverine one around the time of starting the Return
same
of Wolverine
thing, same thing
stuff.
With the Venoms they've been doing for that. But Venom's got a movie coming as well, but they did a bunch of the Venom stuff when that was launching.
No doubt when the Ms. Marvel or the Captain Marvel movie comes out, we'll get a slew at that point. It just makes sense. It's smart. You get people coming off the movie, you want to give them stuff that's cheap and interesting and time-tested, and could then theoretically get them into a trade or something like that.
Absolutely. No, I think it's great.
So to me, this is where DC's leaving money on the table. They could be doing the same sort of a thing for the TV shows and movies and whatnot, and for the properties they've just got otherwise sitting on the shelf. Going to be interesting next month when we've got that second issue of Magic Order to see how much that plummeted, and to see how the Batrimony stuff winds up with Batman 50, among other things, as well as we should have Action Comics 1001 and Superman number 1, I believe.
Yep.
So should have some good
stuff.
Should
be.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions. They're not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists. It included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath Logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.